I'm sorry, that was more than 5 minutes. I was just trying to remember how I'd use this thing. Is this still a good time, or have I taken too long?
Yeah, you did. Right now.
Okay, let me just checking the volume here with. Can you just tell me your name and the date? Let me just check the volume on your line.
My name is Joseph Johns Caone.
Okay. All right, I'm gonna pull that up a little. Okay.
You wanted to ask me about turpentine and black people and.
Right. Let me start with the story of the question I had about the mules and horses with your father working as a driver.
Yeah.
By the way, I've seen that referred to in books, that role as a teamster. Did you ever use that term to describe or hear that used?
No.
Okay. What term did you use?
For a driver,
mm-hmm,
of a wagon?
Yeah.
He was just a driver.
Okay. Okay. All right, you had mentioned just a few minutes ago, you said there were three incidents you could remember with runaways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And your father was a driver for...
All three of those.
Okay. Can you tell me about what you remember?
Well, I remember once we were pulling into a still, and we were just fixing to offload the barrels of tar, and the tar was always left in an area where it could be tipped over and rolled up a ramp and dumped into the still. And just as we pulled into the still, there was an explosion in the still. And it just frightened the horses and the mules. And they ran away, and my father and I were sitting up on the wagon, and we were going just about as damn fast as possibly down the road. And he's trying to tell me to pull the pin, right? And he's pointing towards the pin, but I didn't know what he was talking about. And he was trying to hold the horses back. So I finally figured it out. So I pulled the pin. He turned loose the reins. They went one way, and we wound up upside down in a ditch.
Was anybody hurt?
Oh, yeah, we both got hurt pretty bad. We were banged up, you know. I remember I broke my shoulder collarbone, and he was all banged up. And we lay there, the guy came along in an old truck and picked us up and carried us back up to the still. And then the other time...
Well, let me just ask, did the company then or the owner pay for, take you to the doctor or anything?
No. We never seen any doctor. None of us ever seen a doctor.
Did somebody have knowledge on how to set bones in the sort of...
To reset the bones?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they reset my arm or tried to, and it's... It bothers me to this day.
Huh.
They put me in a mud pack. I don't know if you're familiar with mud packs or not. Indians had a way of taking everything with a broken bone, and they pack your arm or your leg or whatever got broke with mud, and it would it harden up. It was just like the stuff that they use today, the plaster kind of.
Like a cast, I see.
Yeah, yeah.
So there was somebody in the community, in your community, who had knowledge, at least traditional knowledge of medicine?
No, my mother did.
Your mother did that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was just something that people in general knew. It wasn't like there was a special healer in the,
If you had a broke leg, you pulled on it to, it would go back in the position or the best, you know, they would figure it was,
mm-hmm,
and that would be it. They'd put the mud on you.
Well, how about the, you said there were three incidents. What else do you remember?
Yeah, okay. The other one is a wildcat. My father and I were loading a wagon, and we used to take, there was two long stilts, about 20, 30 feet long, and we used to put them on the back of the wagon, and we would roll these barrels up on the wagon and then tip them up. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And him and I was out rolling the barrels up on the wagon, and I heard something, you know, in the bushes over there, but I never paid it much attention. And there was a wildcat over there, and she had some cubs over there, and she come out, and let me tell you, she was pissed off, period. And we were too close to her. And the mules run away. We jumped up on the wagon, and after about a quarter of a mile, we was able to pull the pin and let them go. And we rolled off, jumped off, and that was. Then they was. The time that. Oh, some damn dogs got after us. They were wild dogs.
Mm-hmm.
They would, you know, they used to travel in packs. They'd be like five, six, maybe seven dogs in a pack. And we were going to the still. We were about 10 miles from the still, I guess. And we were going down this road, and this pack of dogs run out of the woods over there and started chasing trying to bite the mules on the leg and stuff like that, and they run away that time. And I was familiar with the pen by then. And I pulled the pen, my dad threw the lines away, and we the wagon, it went one way and we went the other. That was about the end. I can't remember anymore.
When you say wildcats, do you mean panthers? Is that
no,
what you're...
No, they were not panthers. Georgia had some panthers in Old Finoke.
Right.
But right up there where we was at it, around McRae.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you ever heard of McRae.
Yes, I have.
You have you?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's where we were at, right outside of McRae there. And we were... out in the woods. I mean, it was woods.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing but woods out there. And that's where we lived at, in the damn woods. And he came out, the panther came out of the, out of the bushes and was just snarling at us. And he shook the mules up and they took off.
But you said it wasn't a panther or... At that time, or you said there were some down in the Okefenokee, but this incident, you said it was a wildcat, and I was just...
I think it was a wildcat. I'm not sure.
Okay.
It was a big cat. I know that.
Okay.
She was mad.
Did your father have any particular techniques or things that he used, you know, with the mules? Was he the one that cared for the mules too, or was he just the driver?
No, he was just the driver. Well, they were never cared for, really. They were just putting the lot and turn loose at night, and they'd eat and whatever they did, and next morning we'd go down there and hook them up and take off again.
So they weren't just sort of general... do you remember any of the terms he used as far as driving them?
Yes, I do, but I don't know if you want to hear them.
Well, I don't mind hearing them. The question is, do you want to tell me?
Oh, my God. I've heard him cuss the mules for everything in the world. The mules had a habit, okay? When they got hot, they'd stop. And when they'd stop, they'd stand there, and just stand there until they cooled off, and then they'd go. And... He had a lot of patience, but he was, you know, he'd get mad at the mules, and they wouldn't budge. Hell, they'd stay there. They cooled off. but they'd be totally wet. I mean, it's hot, you know. And he'd just get aggravated and walk around the wagon, and finally he'd get them cooled down enough, and he'd try and pull them off, get them off into the shade somewhere, you know. Or they, wherever they got hot, they'd stop. If it was in the sunshine or if it was in the shade, they'd stop. And that was about the way it was.
So he had some colorful language, but you're not going to tell me.
He had some colorful language.
Okay. So
he'd call them mules every kind of a son of a bitch that there was in the world.
And you said you were at McRae. Was there a particular still, a particular company you're working for at this time, or a particular boss man?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He was, what the hell was his name? My God. Good God, girl. You're taking it back 100 years.
I know. Not quite 100.
What the hell was that man named? I was just thinking about him the other day. He was very seldom seen. I can't remember his name. He owned about 1, 2, 3 stills, and they were about 15, 20 miles apart. I can't remember that man's name. Right on hand. But anyway,
okay.
I worked for the man for all my life, seems like I was when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably seen him once or twice. Now, he had a brother named Todd that he was a dude. Let me tell you, this was a dude. He would ride around, and you never knew when Todd was going to show up. He always rode a big white horse and big shiny boots and had on Jodhpur's pants, and he was ready. First person that was going out in the woods, and you never knew when he was going to show up. You'd look up and there'd be sometimes far back in the woods. We'd be dipping tar back there, or pulling boxes, chipping, or whatever we were doing. And there'd be Todd. All of a sudden, you'd look up, and he'd be there.
Were you very often really supervised, or your work checked up on by
never.
A woods rider or anybody?
No.
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 You're pretty
never ever
pretty independent then.
Yep, you had to be. You had to be independent, but. It was like, okay, I would have 250 trees, okay? And after I knew the trees, I'd just automatically go to them trees, you know? I had a path, like, not exactly a path, but you could see where I had been between the trees, and that's the way I worked them.
Yeah, I actually had a question about that, but it was further on. But I think somewhere, I can remember it, though. You referred to the, you know, that you followed your, just now you used the term path, but in here you talked about trails, and that was the term that you used.
And that would have been a new trail, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The new trail we would have, what we do would break a twig, and that way we'd never get lost. If you went off of your given path, we would usually just break a twig,
mm-hmm.
you know, and every 2-5 feet, whatever, and just break a limb, and that way we'd always find our way out of there.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause I've heard people that I've talked to, other people here in South Georgia, talk about, oh no, I can't think of the word. What is it? It's the three-something path. You know, there's these little kind of ruts that go off into the woods. But the term, was path. And I just sort of picked up on your use of the term trail, and I wondered if that was inadvertent or if that was a common...
Well, that's Indian.
That's what I thought, yeah.
Yeah.
And so...
The Indian don't use the word path.
Right.
It's always trail.
And so you're, the knowledge that you had to kind of, as you said, breaking a twig when mm-hmm. with a new trail, is that something that, that any, in your experience, any woodsman... in the, this area of South Georgia would do, or do you think that's more of a
Indian
technique?
It was common knowledge. If you was white, black, or whatever the hell you were,
uh-huh.
if you went into a new area, you had to know where you was going
right.
to get back out. So you just reach up and break a twig.
Do you think that there were any techniques or type of knowledge for navigating through the swamp or through the woods in South Georgia, because you weren't always working in swamp, but in the woods that were distinctive to the creek?
I don't know if I understand what you mean.
Well, you mentioned there were different, you had worked with whites and you'd seen blacks and Cajuns
mm-hmm.
and there were Indian people working in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm asking, as far as knowledge of navigating in the woods and this kind of thing, do you think someone like yourself who grew up creek and with, with the kinds of knowledge that was passed on by your uncles and grandfather and so forth, do you think that you had specialized knowledge because of your background?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
About navigating the woods in particular?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Is there anything particular that comes to mind?
The sun.
The sun.
The sun told me where I was at.
Uh-huh.
If it was a cloudy day, I was lost. I was lost without the sun. But I could, and my wife is sitting here right now, and she would tell you, I have a sense of never getting lost. I could go anywhere in the world and never get lost. It aggravates my wife at times because I can navigate like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the... I don't know how to explain it to you. It's just that I don't know.
Is that something you were taught?
Yes.
By your elders?
Yes.
Okay. And did you work with, other non-Indian people and they didn't have that same kind of
yes,
sense that you did?
Yes.
Okay.
And I didn't teach them.
Right. Anything else that comes to mind besides about skills with navigating in the woods?
I don't know if the black people, how they did it, mm-hmm. tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them were Geechies. You know what a Geechie is?
Yes.
You do know what a Geechie is?
Yes.
Okay, then if you're familiar with a Geechie, you can hardly understand them.
Right.
Now, they would come from Alabama and South Carolina up to, and they'd work up in the woods out there during the turpentining season. Then they'd take off and go, Lord knows where they'd go. but they would, they were kind of like a bunch of vagabonds. A lot of them from Alabama, they were high yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me.
Geechee, you're referring to the blacks from the coast, right? The sea islands of Georgia and South Carolina? Is that the
That's where they came from.
Right, okay.
Yep. Sea Island, Georgia. They came from out in Johns Island, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've heard them talk about that a lot.
So they were working in the woods also?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And this came up in the context of navigating in the woods. Was there something about Geechies that you had noticed or not?
Geechies, I always got a kick out of Geechies because they were short and black as black can be and talked so fast you couldn't understand them. They had their own language. It was Gula.
Gullah, yeah.
Yeah, Gullah.
Mm-hmm.
You familiar with Gullah?
Yes.
Okay, they spoke Gullah. And if they didn't want you to understand them, they would... if they were standing around talking and you walked up to them, they would start talking Gullah. And when you walked away, they'd talk English. You know, if they didn't want you to understand what they were talking about. Mm-hmm.
And they were working in the woods only at a certain time of year?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. Usually from, let's see, around May, June, July, August, maybe around the middle of September, they would take off.
And was there...
I don't know where they went.
Did they have a special role in the woods, or they just do anything that needed being
they
done?
They do anything in the world you give them to do.
Uh-huh.
They didn't care.
And were there just a few, or were there many in your experience?
No, there was usually four or five families of them. And they would live over in the, well, I like to say colored quarters, but in Georgia they said nigger quarters, mm-hmm. of course, and that's where they lived at.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd live in any damn house you give them. They were all given a house, you know. They didn't pay no rent, no, they didn't pay for nothing.
You don't think it was taken out of their pay?
No.
Like as a, you know, like commissary stuff
no,
was?
No.
Okay.
If you went to the commissary and bought a pair of overalls, right?
Mm-hmm.
It probably cost you $1.98, something like that. If I remember right, I don't remember what a pair of overalls cost you. A couple of bucks, anyway. It would then come out of here. Or if you bought fat back, matches, cooking lard, flour, sugar, mm-hmm. salt, stuff like that. It was all, you know, that's about all they had in there.
Mm-hmm. Well, since you brought up Geechies, that comes to the question of the different groups that you remember working in the woods. Tell me about the you mentioned here in your notes, Cajuns. Tell me about what you remember there.
The Cajuns?
Mm-hmm.
I know nothing about them.
But there were some that were working in the woods.
Yes.
And you knew
my
they were...
My aunt was a Cajun.
Pardon?
I had an aunt that was a Cajun. She came from out there on that pepper farm, McElherney.
Uh-huh.
Well, when I was in the Peabody Museum, Mrs. McElherney, she was, my God, 100-something years old, I guess. She used to come to the Peabody Museum, and she bought a collection of carvings from me. And she knew my aunt's family when they lived on the pepper farm out there.
And where was that?
See, that would have been... Where the hell is that pepper farm at? It's in Louisiana, anyway.
Okay. But you, so the Cajun whom, the woman, your aunt, was she like the only one, or was there more?
Well, she came up there with a group of people, and she met my uncle up there, and they got married there.
In Louisiana?
No, in Georgia.
Okay, so they came working as a crew?
Yeah, yeah.
In Turpentine?
Yeah.
Okay. All a family group, do you remember?
Yeah. Any?
Okay. Were they the only ones that you knew about?
That was, well, no, I knew all of them. But, you know, working with them for four or five months, then they'd be gone, and next year another crew would come by. Sometimes the same ones would come back. Usually they would just move around from picking vegetables to whatever kind of work they mm-hmm. could get.
And that included working in the woods.
Yep.
And did they live in company housing or?
Yep.
Okay.
They were shacks.
Uh huh. But
they may have been. Let's see. This place we lived at, where Bobby was born, was called English. It was a place called English Crossing.
Mm-hmm.
That's where Bobby was born. At.
Where was that near?
Georgia. English Crossing, Georgia.
Right. Was it near any other town that you
were? No. Know?
Okay.
No, it was just, there was one store there up on the road, up on the highway,
mm-hmm.
and we lived in a house about a mile from the store back in the woods over there. And the Turpentine still was there, and there was a lot of activity around there. You know, when people would come in from the woods, they'd go over to the quarters and live.
Mm-hmm. And,
Now, the Cajuns, they didn't live over there. They wanted separate houses. They tried to stay around with the white people or the Indians. They wouldn't live with blacks.
Mm-hmm. And in your experience, I guess, because you have an aunt who was from this group, did they kind of come as a crew and stay kind of off to themselves as a crew, or would they mix with other folks?
Oh, they mixed during the day when they were working. Mm-hmm. You know, they were friends, and they spoke their own language.
Right.
And when we talked to them, they talked in English.
But I mean, if you and your father worked together, for example, would it be likely that Cajuns would work with other Cajuns most of the time, or would they?
No, they'd work with everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just a mixed crew.
Okay. With blacks also then?
Who?
With Cajuns and blacks?
Yeah, they worked all the...
Okay.
You might run into a Cajun out there, a dipping tar. You might run into a black, or you might run into an Indian, or you might run into any damn body that was out there.
Right. And what is your sense about how... I'm trying to think of the word I'm looking for. What... Your family, you mentioned, you know, a number of people in your family worked in the woods. Was that common with other Indian families that you knew? I guess I'm trying to get a sense of how typical it was to find Indian people in the woods.
Well, at that point of time,
which
it
is
was
what,
only the, my father and myself.
Uh-huh.
And I was a youngster, and I rode on a wagon with him, and I drove a wagon, and he helped him on the wagon. And then when I got big enough, I started my own trail, see. So I had probably 250, 300 trees I worked.
But you didn't know any other Indian families that worked in the woods? That was my question.
Sure I did.
There were, okay. So I guess that was the question, how common, was that a common occupation amongst other Indian people in South Georgia at the time?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Tar Heel was a damn Tar Heel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they, you know, they all help each other. And, on Sunday, they have a ball game, and you'd have black people, you'd have Indians out there, you might have a bunch of Cajuns out there, you have Geeches. They all play ball on, you know, on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It was always a big ball game on Sunday.
And that was with the people at the particular camp or with the particular boss man that you were all working for?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And was that somewhere like near the commissary, or where would the ball field be located?
Where would what?
Where would the ball field be located?
Usually over in the colored quarters.
Uh-huh.
They would just have a big clearing out there, and it was always a ball game out there, but it was always in the colored quarters.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned here Geechee's Indian, were most of the Indian people that you remember being around or working with also Creek, or were there other groups represented too?
They were all Creeks.
Uh-huh.
And Creeks, the Creek Indians got such a bad deal from the Cherokees that they didn't have too much to do with them.
Okay.
If a Cherokee came down and he didn't live too long.
Right. But since I...
You know the history of the Creek Indian Wars and the Cherokees, right? You know all that.
Well, I know briefly what I've read. Is there something particular that...
Well, this could go on forever. Let's see. It started around the time DeSoto, okay, came through the southeast. You follow me?
Yep.
Okay. When he encountered the Creek Indians in on the Ottumwa River and the Oconee River, they all lived on the river down there around Jacksonville, Georgia, and that area there, mm-hmm. right on the banks of the Okefenokee. Now, when he came down in there, all the men had, all the braves had kind of disappeared. They were watching them come into the camp, but they didn't hurt the people, and they didn't, they didn't try to mutilate the women or children or anything like that. They were looking for the men. They wanted the men. But then they told them, Seminole. And you know what Seminole means?
Runaway.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, so they would told them, Seminole, and they would point to the trail, which led back into Florida, where they had just come from. So they moved on and moved up north. But then the conflict between the Creek Indians and the Cherokees, when DeSoto got up into North Georgia, they told him that the Creek men had went down into the swamp, see, and they went back, but they still didn't catch him. They knew they were coming. The Creek Indians never forgave them for telling them where they were at.
Okay.
That's a long story.
Made short. All right. Well, I must confess, being from Michigan, I'm a lot more familiar with the upper Midwest, but I'm trying to learn about this area as much as I can. But okay.
Now, Bobby's got a book that I sent him about a month ago.
Uh-huh.
It's got all the Creek history in it.
Okay.
Now, if he'll lend you that book,
okay,
it will tell you everything you want to know about the Creek Indians.
Okay. Are you able to tell me what story might have been, the stories passed down to you and your family about, you know, what happened to your family during the time of the Trail of Tears and how they were able to either stay or come back to South Georgia?
No, as far as I know, they stole horses and came back.
Uh-huh.
That's about the only story I ever heard my grandfather, you know, mentioned to me.
Uh-huh. And so is that there's some sort of story about the return for most of the families that you knew growing up in South Georgia. They had found a way to come back.
From Oklahoma?
Mm-hmm. Or at least either from Oklahoma or they just kind of somehow escaped from the removal.
I just told you, they stole horses and come back from Oklahoma.
Right. That was your family. Is that the sense of how most other families came back also?
Yep.
Okay.
They'd steal a horse and ride the damn thing till it dropped dead and then steal another one.
Right.
And all the way through the southeast, as they got back home, and they'd stay there.
Right. And this is off the topic of turpentine. I don't know how but just looking at your the Altamaha sculpture that was you sent me the
mm-hmm.
the write up on, and you talk about the symbol. It talks about the symbolism in it, and I guess that's also in that paper that the student did about the two mirror heads of horses.
What did you look at it?
Yes.
Did you see them?
Yes, but what I'm asking is the Altamaha symbol used by Creek scouts is. because I'll confess, I haven't read what I need to read about the creek because I'm just getting started. Is that something that you learned from reading, or is that something that was passed down to you?
My grandfather talked about it.
Okay. So that imagery is all stuff that was handed down to you from your grandfather.
Yeah, that was carved many, many, many years before I was born.
Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. It really is. Okay, so it was only creek is how we got started this that you remember working with. Because there's some man I just met recently who's part Sioux who somehow ended up here.
A Sioux Indian.
Yeah.
In Georgia.
Yeah. He worked turpentine, too. He lives.
Really?
Yeah, he still lives out in Eccles County, which is the one just east of where we are here.
Yeah.
Kind of doesn't have a phone. But I met him at they have an old turpentine still in Tifton at the Agrorama that they, and they do a firing every year. And that's a good place to go up and meet people. It attracts a lot of former turpentiners and their families.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him there a year ago.
And he's a Sioux Indian.
Part Sioux.
No, they don't.
Looking at him, you can see that there's or something. Okay. The question I had about the tools that were made in the winter by your father, for example, what kind of tools did he make?
Oh, they were usually a blacksmith on the that worked for the company, and he used to make them.
Okay. Now, repairing tools, is that something that he did, or did the individual work?
Yeah, well, the handles come, you know, after you use a puller, a chipper, the handles used to come loose, and he'd fix them.
Okay. Is that anything that you did?
Oh, I've done it, yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a whole damn drawer full out there of tools that I've put together.
But ones that were from the turpentine era.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some other folks I've talked to have told me that you'd actually make the handles or the stocks of the hacks or whatever to...
The hacks, yeah.
Yeah, to fit your hand, basically.
Yeah.
Was there a particular type of wood that was used?
Oak.
What, like that water oak then? Is that?
It'd been water oak.
Or live oak.
Pin oak or something like that.
Yeah.
Usually you'd cut a limb and try and just trim it down to however you wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
After hafting is when you fix a blade into a handle. That's called hafting. And
H-A-F-T-I-N-G, is that what you said?
That's right, hafting. Once the blade is... has been hafted, it's ready to be used.
Okay. You'd have the blacksmith would make the blade and then
would
the hafting be something that a blacksmith would do or
No. He made the blade, that's it.
Okay.
He'd give it to you.
Uh-huh.
And you have to sharpen it and shape it and do whatever you want it to with.
Okay. You mentioned here also, I'm moving ahead, that the stiller was always a white man and that he had more prestige than the other. But other than the stiller, everyone else was fairly equal.
Yep.
So your dad, even though like a wagon driver,
he was
considered the same as someone who just worked.
Giles, that's the man's name, D-Y-A-L-S, that owned all that property.
Okay.
Dials. Okay, now ask me a question.
Okay. Here, I'm going to write that down. Dials.
Yep, and he was in Macrae, and he owned, oh my God, he owned a lot of the property in Georgia there.
Okay. I was talking about the stiller had the most prestige, but other than that, everyone was pretty much equal.
Yeah.
In terms of
So
driving the mule wasn't considered.
No.
Any.
No. No big deal.
Different. Okay. You said that I had the question about nicknames, and you mentioned yours. Do you remember any other nicknames of folks in your crew or your father or other families and people that you worked with?
Just my brother, Bobby. Uh-huh. His name and nickname was Bone Jigs.
Oh, that's right. He told me that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me a little bit more about Payday. Payday was at the still, for that you remember, not at the
commissary. Payday was very simple.
Uh-huh.
You got in line, walked up to the paymaster, which was the stiller. The stiller used to pay us, mm-hmm. and he gave you a paper sack with your money in it.
And after, it says after you were paid, you went to the commissary, paid your bill.
That's right.
There was a crap game.
Yep.
Bootleggers and prostitutes. Huh?
Yep, there'd be some of them around there.
Uh-huh. Were black and white, Indian?
Yeah, yeah.
All of the above?
Pretty much.
Uh-huh. Do you remember, I think somewhere...
They were dejected women, actually. Some of them even lived out there around the, you know, the still.
Mm-hmm.
They were divorced, or their husband went off and left them, or something like that.
Uh-huh. Once the stuff was paid for at the commissary, did your family have much left?
No.
No.
Hell no.
Yeah.
Very little.
Uh-huh.
Now, my father used to make $7 a week.
That was in the clear?
That was it, $7.
Was the bill taken out of that, or that was after the bill was paid?
He used to get a paper bag with $7 in it.
Okay.
Then he would go over to the commissary, and he'd pay whatever he owed over there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. We have $5, $6 or something like that, which was a lot of money.
Right. You mentioned, actually, in looking at your stuff about your carving, and you talked about the mixture, the recipe that you were used to kind of.
I'll send you a recipe copy if you want it.
But it includes turpentine.
Huh?
It includes turpentine.
Homemade turpentine.
Right. Mm-hmm. Is that different from what you would get out in the woods?
Yeah, it
okay.
is. Yeah.
Okay, so there really isn't any connection between the family working in the woods? Because that was passed on to you by your grandfather.
It was homemade turpentine.
Okay.
So a total different formula.
Uh-huh. And was that used for anything else?
Yes.
The homemade stuff was?
Yes.
Can you tell me?
It was medicinal, okay. Used for medicine.
Okay. And how was that different then from what was done in the woods? How was it made?
You take a 5-gallon bucket, you take some fat lighted wood, you put in it, you start a fire, you put the bucket down in there and covered it with dirt and just left it.
Uh-huh.
And it would heat the coals, heat up the wood inside, and it would seep down, and it was a tarry, very thick syrupy substance, and it was used for everything from broken ankles to carbuncles.
Okay, because when other people, and I'm saying non-Indian people that I've talked to about, used turpentine as medicine as well, but I think my understanding was it was the same stuff that was distilled at the still. It wasn't anything special that was made. So you're telling me that for medicinal purposes you use this homemade stuff, never what was either what was processed at the stills that you and your father were working at.
No, it was 100% different.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting. Were you aware of anybody else then using it that way, or is this an Indian thing?
I don't know if anybody used it other than Indians.
Right. I haven't heard of that, so.
No.
When you say that a little turpentine on the straw hat kept the insects away, that was the stuff that you were out getting from the buckets and stuff out in the woods, right? That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah, well, you could take a handful of tar and rub it up on your old straw hat, and it'd keep bugs out. I got to end this conversation here.
Okay. All right. Could I call you back another day and just
sure.
chat some more?
Sure.
Okay. So is when would be a good time to catch you? Is there later this?
It's hard to say.
Okay. So
just take it by whenever.
Okay. I might try and catch you up with you again the end of the week.
Okay.
And I'll see if I can find out anything about the
prisons
and I'll let you know.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Johns.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.